you specialize in music, most people do. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you check out our Facebook page, Instagram, and our website. Let us show what you're into.
Yo, this is John from Noise Dosage Media, and this episode is brought to you by Begrudgingly Benny. Interested in putting something horrific and grotesque on your next piece of merch? Benny is tucked away in the fiery depths of COVID quarantine, blasting the filthiest of old school death metal and drawing hideous creatures that he is waiting for you to adopt. Go over to Instagram and follow at Begrudgingly Benny and contact him if you would like some really weird original art for your band or label. Super professional, highly recommended.
You know, what do you want to do differently from your other projects that you've been in compared to this one? Like, what sets this one apart?
Oh, man. Well, everything, really. I mean, it's funny. I don't know where to start. So this is actually the first project that I've ever got to engineer myself. And nice. So that's been kind of fun. You know, like, every year I kind of have like a list of things that I want to learn, you know, things I want to do that, you know, I've never done before. One of those things last year was to kind of teach myself or force to teach myself engineering and Logic. So mm-hmm. I wound up buying Logic, and it was the first thing I ever really tracked. Of course, I mean, it sounds amazing because of Will Putney, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, just having something to engineer and learn all that was pretty cool. Right. And
do you do it all on the electronic kit?
I did. Yeah. So that's, that's a new one that I have now here. But yeah, I did, the tracking on all, I mean, everything was done kind of in the box and through file sharing and stuff like that, you know? And it was fun. I mean, to kind of, you know, like I've never really fucked with doing an electronic recording or anything like that before, or resampling and stuff like that. But I will say that, like, you know, having drum resamples or samples was really beneficial for me to like kind of like find grooves and like not to write grooves, because I know that's like that to write drums for their songs. As a drummer myself, I find it just easier to play.
Right.
You know? Instead of having to sit there in a MIDI roller and start tapping, you know, grooves and whatnot.
Right. Yeah. That's what I've been doing recently. I just got into, I don't know, like I always had Easy Drummer. So I just stuck with the beats and wrote off of that. But now I'm getting into, individually hitting each, note. And it's a lot of work, and I feel
it's
like
tedious. Yeah, and as a, I mean, like I edit video all the time too, and that's tedious, but I got enough tedious shit in my life. I don't need to be like sitting there plucking at a snare drum, so I'd rather just play it and then record it, you know, and then, you know, if anything, I can like change the velocity of a hit or something like that, but nothing like extravagant, you know.
It's so crazy nowadays, like you don't even need to record a record acoustically anymore, because there's just so many audio engineers that just sit and just get that snare down, you know, like, or get that freaking tom.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many like real big recording studios I go to, and they're doing exactly the same stuff anyway. Like, it might as well have been recorded on an electronic set, because they basically just like rechannel a lot.
Yeah, you just resample everything.
Resample them, and a lot of the times edit the shit out of them, and you know. So yeah, I don't. It's kind of weird. I mean, like, really, the only thing I think that's different is, you know, they still haven't perfected, maybe, is the cymbals of, you know, live.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that, because like the cymbals in particular, like a ride, for example, when you hit the bell, there's not really, it's very, the sensitivity is not there. That
getting
specific
better,
cymbal.
I just got the new Roland VAD set, the one that Jay Weinberg from Slipknot is shouting about, and it's kind of fucking awesome. It's a USB digital ride that has, like,
there you go,
five different flex points, and they're thinner and they act more like a cymbal. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
That's sweet.
And you know, but I only have this now for about a week, so maybe the next record will, you know, sound a little different because of it. We don't know. But yeah, I mean, a lot of what we did was kind of file sharing. I mean, it really started as like a joke, you know, a drunk joke type thing. It was
called See, Slammy. But it works.
Yeah, it's called Slammy Sosa. That was
like I looked on that package. It was like Ignorant Slam or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So we called it it's just that was the whole thing of the band. We just wanted to write ignorant, like, slam, dumb shit. You know, every vocalist that wound up coming to track, we just told them, it was like, let's just do the dumbest lyrics that you can think of, you know? And so Doug wrote a song called, his is DSITS. So it actually stands for Dog Shit in the Snow. So
that's awesome.
Song called, you know, it's all about seeing dog shit in the snow, because he was on the way to my house and was like, it was in December, it was snowing. So, you know, Trevor wound up writing a song about wearing jean shorts on a water ride and, you know, all the, you know, the
you got the grind. I feel like you have the grindcore, I don't know, personality with the band, yeah, vocally.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. That's like what we're going for, you know, just be dumb and idiotic and have fun with our friends. And
I heard a little bit of grind in the music too. Like,
yeah. It's in there. There's some Brujeria stuff. There's some Sepultura stuff. There's a whole lot of death metal stuff. We have, like, you know, it's that newer thing we did. It was like a little Decapitated. The one that's on YouTube. We have, you know, we have some stuff coming up. I mean, like, Morbid Angel is one of my favorite bands in the world, and we have some some Morbid Angel esque stuff coming up. And yeah, we're having fun with it. We're kind of like just exploring, you know, re-exploring like early youth metal for us. You know, maybe we'll do some Obituary style stuff just for those shits and giggles.
Freaking have Obituary singer on it. That'd be sweet,
dude. Yes. Yeah. Tardy is a wild man, and I would love to have him part of this, you know.
It'd be so sweet. That'd be so awesome, man. So, you know, with being,
I think I lost you again.
Did you lose me?
I got you. Okay, you're back.
Okay. So you separate the media of a band, like marketing a band, and then being in a band, right? Mm-hmm. And my question to you is, you know, like, what are three tips for a band starting out, like, on social media or just marketing themselves?
I think to figure out what identity they want to go with, you know, up front. Some bands, they figure that out a little too late. You know what I mean? They try to reinvent themselves while... So you're alienating one fan base or one style while you're, you know, trying to move into a different transition type thing.
Right.
I mean, it works for some bands, of course. But I think for a band starting out, like, you want to have a clear idea of what you're trying to achieve before you go ahead and make it public. You know, I think a lot of bands are, they have that itchy trigger finger and they want to get it out. Of course, everybody they want to get it out. I think it's important to know what you're doing, you know, before you put it out, like, you know, not just musically, but like aesthetically, you know, and what the goals of the band are, and you know, what are you going to say, what's your message, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Now, on as the marketing side, you know, like, how do you think a band should be just starting out, like always in your face, or just like slowly, like building, like reaching out to labels and stuff? Do you think that's a good idea?
I mean, no, yes and no. It doesn't hurt to reach out to labels, but it's the kind of thing where if you're doing really well, labels are going to reach out to you, you know?
Right. I mean, that's what I've been noticing recently.
Like, yeah. And you know, I'm in a position where I'm very fortunate to do what I do and, you know, own a popular company within the music industry and know all the key players, you know, and know the owners of a lot of these labels and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't never go and ask about my band, you know, or try to get a handout or anything like that. That's actually like a you know, not just this band, but any band I've ever been part of. That's right. Something that I made very clear to my bandmates, that I wasn't going to use what I do as leverage towards
right,
the band.
Right, right,
it's
right.
Like, we're gonna get something, we're gonna get it because,
like, earn it.
Yeah, we're gonna earn it. I have been committed to earning everything that I have in my life, you know? And
right.
And certainly music is not something that I take lightly, you know? Of course, what I notice is that, you know, if you do your homework, you do your thing, then labels will come to you, you know? Would we sign something in the future? I can't really say. You know,
is this project gonna be, are you gonna do shows or is it just online?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know yet. Simply because, I mean, beyond the fact that we're going through a pandemic right now, we are separated by a country, you know, like we so Nick, the other half of the band, is on the West Coast, on the East Coast, and then we have a different vocalist for every
song. And that's what I was curious about, because like that kind of puts it in an internet project. If you bring a vocalist,
we never intended it to. We never intended it to be a band that was going to go on the road or anything like that. We kind of saw it like a Brujeria type thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they have a cast, so to speak, and it changes, you know, depending on who's around.
Right.
So maybe it could be something like that, you know.
That'd be freaking sweet.
But you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get an offer to do something cool. We're certainly not going to make it like a tour or like an ongoing thing, you know.
Okay. So I'm going to move over to some like metal injection or like personal interview questions. So I've been thinking about something out of the box and you know, what do you think is like a proper amount of questions for like a decent interview?
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost you at, you're going to move over to.
Okay. So what do you think is just enough for like a proper and engaging interview?
You mean like what kind of questions or?
Yeah. Like, what do you think by the end of the interview you're supposed to accomplish?
Like, easy. I want every interview that I do to be informative and fun, you know, or one or the other. It's like, even if it was, I mean, because like there's all types of people in metal. You know what I mean? You have your really funny people. You have your serious people. You have very awkward. There's definitely a lot of awkward artists out there, you know, or people that just don't know what to say. They give you one word answers. I mean,
I haven't gotten that yet, but I don't know what I do.
Dude, I've seen it, heard it all, talked to them all. I'm fortunate. I was a psychology major and double.
That's what I'm, dude. I'm thinking about college, getting into that.
The psychology part always kind of comes out whenever I feel like a counselor to some degree. That you know, sitting down with somebody and trying to learn about them and what makes them tick and what kind of personality they are. And it's kind of my job to weave around that, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, if it was informative, it was a good interview. If it's fun, even better, you know?
Yeah, there you go. So the one interview that I don't know, I always go back to in your discography is Gall. And I talked to Gall like a month ago. Coolest guy ever.
Yeah, I love him. Christian's great.
So basically my question to you was, how was that trip there and what did you like learn along the way? Like behind the scenes.
Well, you know, yeah, so that interview was really unique. I wound up being in Norway for Inferno Festival, and of course I was a little, I don't want to say nervous, but like I just didn't know what to expect. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, like what I know of Gall is, you know, all the shit that's out there, and based on that, you know, being an American who's like, I mean. I'm really into black metal. It's probably, you know, one of my favorite subgenres of metal. I've been to Norway a few times, blackpacking, and you know, and here I was at Inferno Fest interviewing, you know, you know, what is known as like one of the most stoic, like, you know, dark creatures of black metal. And he was drinking and walks in, and we just start kind of like shooting the shit and talking about, you know, his boyfriend and different things. And we just kind of got friendly before we actually started the interview, which I think might have lightened him up. And then we got into the interview, and I started kind of like, in my head, I was even asking like about like, well, you know, do I bring up, you know, talking about his homosexuality and stuff like that. I don't know if he was comfortable with it. But at the end of the day, you know, I'd always rather ask, if, as long as they seem comfortable with it, and if it goes terribly, I could always edit it out later.
Right.
But as it turns out, he was very open about it, and he felt very comfortable, and I was really stoked about that. And if anything, it actually sparked a real friendship, you know, because we actually hung out for the rest of the day. On that day, we drank all day long, and, you know, went around, and I've been back to Europe several times since that meeting, since that interview. And, you know, me and Gal, we've hung out many times, you know, and had great times just like talking about life and, you know, drinking and catching up and stuff like that. So he's become a friend, and, you know, a smiling face, you know, and somebody that I joke with. I've learned is how funny he can be, actually, you know.
Like, yeah.
And he takes cheap shots at me. He'll joke around, you know, like bust my balls. And I'm like, that's awesome. I love that.
I like every time I do a podcast, like, so the max amount of time that I've ever done a podcast is like an hour and 10 minutes. And the nicest dude, the two dudes that I talked to that were the nicest, I mean, I'm not counting you out, Frank, you're a good guy, but Necro Butcher and Gall, man, I talked to them for the most time, and like, they just like were so into it, and like, they tell stories and shit. I'm like, you would never expect it, because people, like, I don't know, just their type of music,
right?
And
I think it's they're misunderstood for sure, you know.
Right.
I think, you know, especially growing up, I grew up long before the internet. So I got to kind of see both sides of what the music industry and what metal has, you know, looks like. And certainly before, you know, in the early 90s, when I was hearing about the church burnings and, you know, the mayhem murders and stuff like that coming through the news and through, you know, newspapers and metal magazines and fanzines and stuff like that, it, like, in my head, just like, I couldn't even like fathom what Norway looks like, you know, until,
right,
you know,
dude, I feel that. And like, I watched some video of Norway, and there was like beaches and stuff, and like,
it's like Norway is like a much prettier version of, you know, I don't know, like a metropolitan city here in the US, you know. I don't know where you're based out of, but
I'm like Buffalo, Niagara Falls ish
just imagine, like, you know, a beautiful Niagara Falls area would be,
yeah, Niagara Falls. Well, that's not hard to beat.
Yeah, it's true. But even like a you know, if you go to Oslo, you know, like way prettier version, and super, you know, artsy and very expensive and wealthy version of New York City, you know.
Yeah, I just went to freaking New York City a couple like months ago. I've never been there, and I was like, you know what, dude, I'm gonna go to New York City. Like, I just trekked it there. Nobody was wearing masks, dude. Nobody.
When was this?
Like a month ago.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. I mean, there's a lot of idiots out here, you know.
I mean, it was stupid for me to go during a coronavirus, but I was like, dude, I want to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't feel like New York right now. It's been really weird, you know, to watch. Right. You know, I've been here all my life, and I've watched this city go through so many changes. And I will say, this is, I think, the weirdest, you know. I'm watching it regress, you know. I've watched it go from, like, you know, just stuff you see in the movies, you know, graffiti and crime and, you know, cockroach, just like the scum of, you know, the armpit of the US to this like wild metropolitan city that's ritzy and
freaking imperial triumphant, man.
It's like Disneyland sometimes, you know, like how family friendly it's become, you know. I remember the days of like 42nd Street was where you go get, you know, cocaine and hookers. And now it's like, you know, Beauty and the Beast and Beauty and the Beast. Opera and everything else.
Yeah.
But now it's actually scaling back to those days. And that's kind of, it's wrong and feels weird. You know, I don't know. I don't know how to explain.
So what you're saying is right now, as the first time goer, that was probably the worst time to go because it's not New York City.
It's not New York City right now. Oh, well, I mean, like any, I think every city is a horrible representation of itself right now during COVID.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
That is true.
So I don't think it's a fair assessment at all to go anywhere right now and say, oh, I've been there, you know?
Right. Where do you think I should go? Like not touristy spots. I mean, this is off topic of music, but I'm curious.
You said where to go or when?
Yeah.
I'll answer both. So when is autumn right now? I think autumn in New York City is like unbeatable. You know, I mean, like anywhere in the Northeast, really, you know, you're experiencing true autumn. Where I love to go, you know, I'm a creature of habit. So I hang out at all the metal bars. You know, I go to
St. Vitus.
I go to Lucky 13, Vitus. You know, all the owners have become close friends of mine over the past, 15, 20 years now or something like that. And I definitely hang out at those three. Other spots, I would go on a pilgrimage and try to look for type of negative spots. You know, I mean, they're hometown heroes of mine, become friends of mine. And I adore the shit out of type of negative, you know, during any season, any day, but especially during the autumn. Right. One of my favorite spots in all of New York City, I got two actually, and they both are typo related. One of them is Brooklyn Bridge Park. That's always been one of my favorite spots since I was a little kid, you know, and back when I was a kid, it was more of a garbage dump that you can kind of like situate yourself between like burning cars and see like a really, really good view of New York City. It's actually where the cover of World Coming Down, that album, that's the cover, like
that's
from
sweet.
Brooklyn Bridge Park. So right in that view right there of where the album cover is where I like to sit and look at New York City. And I just observe it and think it's beautiful. My other favorite is actually Pete's Tree. Peter Steele, when he passed away, he was buried in Long Island, but because he's, you know, was a big part of the Parks Department and, you know, of course, Brooklyn, New York, they memorialized him by putting a plaque on a bench and planted a tree in his honor at Prospect Park.
Wow.
So I go to Prospect Park and it's known as Pete's Tree. And typo fans from all over the world come and leave gifts for Pete and like messages and typo knickknacks and like little coffin boxes. So it's really
awesome.
Cool. You know, I love that spot. It's one of my favorite places in New York and it's really cool to go check out, you know, occasionally.
I did not know about that at all.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I would highly recommend it. I mean, the promenade, there's anywhere that you can like I hang around more in Brooklyn than anything else.
Right.
I mean there of course there's cool spots in Manhattan. You know, Manhattan's the heart of it all, I suppose, but you know, there's something about growing up in Brooklyn where you kind of like you feel for it more, you know.
Right.
I like to be in Brooklyn looking at Manhattan, you know.
Sort of there you go.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you come out during a normal time, and I'll show you around sometime.
I was trying to see Artificial Brain there at St. Vitus, and I don't know, it was like during the week, and I was like, frig, man, that is one band I've been meaning to see.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's it's funny because the owners there, I've joked so much about it, like, but since they started, I made sure that I never live more than 20 minutes away from that venue because it's basically my second home. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I made the mistake of moving 30 minutes away once, and I literally ended my lease early and moved closer because I couldn't take it. yeah. That's how important that place is. You know, it really is my second home.
Now, is that venue? So the Bug Jar in Rochester, right? Their shows start at 9 o'clock. You don't get home till 2 a.m.
Lost
you. Is that lose me?
There you are.
Okay. So does that venue start shows really late and then end shows extremely late?
Both. So what I love about how New York City operates, and I've never really seen this in any other city, is that they know that there's unionized venues out there, you know, owned by Live Nation, AEG and stuff like that. So they stagger sets throughout all of New York City. I mean, like New York, they might have on, you know, a normal time, you can have like 5 cool shows going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all sold out. And I love that about, like, metal is so strong in New York. You know, it's the only place, yep. Like I said, the only city I've ever been to where there'd be 5 awesome metal shows in one night. They're all sold out.
Right.
And
right.
The cool thing is that, you know, I'll show hop, you know what I mean? So I might go to like find, you know, I want to go see a set at this one and a set at this one, a set at that one. And I love that Vitus and some of the smaller places, they stagger their set times to accommodate people who are going to see, you know, a cool show at, you know, PlayStation Theater or an AEG theater or something like that, you know? So you can go.
Venues never do that. That's smart as hell.
Go see the Meshuggah show. And then when Meshuggah's done at 11 p.m., because it's a unionized venue, you can go to Vitus where 11 p.m. is the you know, doors for the show that they're having at the late night there, you know, and go see like 3 more awesome bands, you know.
Wow. Yeah, they don't do that here. Holy crap. That's smart.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, trust me.
It feels like venues always, like, around here, they're always, like, fighting each other. Like, they specifically pick one metal show at the same date every month, like a festival.
Yeah, it's
like,
not really
competing.
Well, I mean, and that's what I love about, like, the New York City vibe and metal vibe specifically here is that they really, like, there is a very healthy base here. And you know, they understand that people want to see a lot of different bands and a lot of different shows. And, you know, of course you're going to have some people who are like, well, I only go to mainstream places or mainstream shows and stuff like that. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are interested in seeing the smaller acts in smaller places and stuff like that. And, it's cool how they work together. You're right. You know,
there you go. So you've been really busy this quarantine.
Yeah.
Been keeping me, entertained, slay at home. So basically my question to you is, you know, we see the final product, but they don't see the amount of video editing and tracks and, you know,
dude, it is
like, I'm just curious how you keep it all together. Like, do you have
I don't. No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. So I have one coming up, this Friday.
Uh-huh.
And what is it right now? It's Wednesday, and I haven't slept, you know, in about 2 days now because I've been just panicking to get this done in time. Like,
right,
every time, every edition that you see, it's like, to me, I just finished it like an hour before it goes, you know, up, and I'm like, it's going to take a miracle to like make it happen. And then I'm like, how did I do that? You know? And, dude,
do you like, mix, do you personally mix this stuff?
That's not even close to done. I mean, for this Friday, you
know,
like I'm still waiting on tracks and that have to be mixed and
edited. Yeah. But do you mix it? Like,
it's a combination of stuff. So like I have mixed audio on some of these. I have friends who are willing to mix. I call in favors with a lot of producers.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's for charity, people are really awesome. And that's been such a saving grace of this all is, you know, that there's so many awesome people out there who are willing to help, you know, not just the artists, but the people behind the scenes who are, you know, like producers out there who want to help. Occasionally there are bands out there who will take care of it themselves, which is great. You know, like they'll get their own producer or friend or whatever on board. And that's really cool. Every little bit helps, man. Like it's such a big undertaking, you know, to curate and organize and host and figure out what the charity is going to be, which bands are going to be part of it. Keep track of all the tracks that are coming in and, you know, then get it all edited, packaged, you know, uploaded for live streaming.
And then wait 2 hours to let it upload on YouTube.
I'm sorry.
And then to wait an hour to put it on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, it goes, yeah, basically when an episode is done airing is like the calmest I ever am. Like, you know, I'm like, it's like, oh, I can't believe that just happened. And I'm so stoked it went off without a hitch. And, you know, but, it, you know, that's only for a couple of minutes. And then it goes right back into chopping.
Shit, I got to do another one.
Performance and then uploading those, you know, for the next couple of days. There's always so much work.
Is your computer like a freaking tank? That's my question.
I actually have a few. So I'm talking to you on my MacBook Pro, which is what I'm talking to you on right now. I actually have the Mac Pro on like a giant desktop thing here going on.
Yeah.
And that's what I use. It's a 12 core actually.
Wow. Okay. So,
a lot of power.
Yeah. Like I'm just like, cause I was blown away. I didn't know that Metal Injection was only with the two people, you and your sidekick. And I was like, holy shit, man. Now thinking about it, like there's just so much like content. So
yeah, on Slay at Home?
Yes.
I mean, well, content has always been my game, you know, with we started Metal Injection as a Brooklyn cable access television show, kind of like Wayne's World.
Yep.
You know, so it started as a TV show and then it was still a TV show when it kind of, you know, went to the web, but, and we predate YouTube. So if you could imagine putting, you know, many metal web episodes on the internet before YouTube existed, that was a big undertaking and a lot of money, but you know, that's how we started. And that's been kind of our calling card, you know, like original content. And I'm very proud, you know, every year, to just think of something else, you know, to, you know, look at where we're at and try to do something cool with it. You know, I'm very fortunate that I get to live out a lot of my dreams, you know, not just of meeting my heroes and working with them, but anything I can think of, I can make
reality. Yeah. You make it happen.
You know? Yeah.
Dude, it's awesome.
Be creative. Every day.
Dude, it's just crazy for me. Like I just started my podcast, I don't know, like 6 months ago. And I've talked to so many people like I would have never expected. Like the metal community is just so, I don't know.
Like, anything's possible, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So my one thing off of Metal Injection is like, I read an article that you were at like a marketing firm, correct? And that's how it kind of all started?
No, not exactly. So we were actually at a telecommunications company.
Telecommunications.
So it was like the IDT Corporation. I don't even know if those exist anymore, but there used to be things called calling cards. Like if you wanted to call internationally, you would buy a calling card. And that would allow you to call, you know, Russia for really cheap or whatever. And so I was managing a telecommunication company. And I was looking to hire people, and this girl I was seeing at the time, she wound up bringing in two of her friends. One of them wound up being Rob, my partner
in Metal
Injection now, and the other kid was wearing an Opeth t-shirt at a time that nobody really knew who Opeth was yet.
Right.
And I walked in the room and I was like, I don't know your story, but you're both hired.
You know? Dude, Frederick, I'm talking to him Friday.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, great dudes, man. And yeah, so that's essentially how it happened. I mean, if you want to put it, Opeth indirectly was like, you know, part of the reason we started Metal Injection.
Yeah.
Rob was like just getting into metal, and what he would do, he would come to my office during his lunch break and ask me
shoot the shit,
you know, about metal bands and stuff like that. And I would just start talking, you know, about like, oh, this band and, you know, the history of the members and how they, you know, interacted with each other. And then Gene Hoglan left this band and went to Strapping Young Lad, and, you know, give him the whole nine, and showed him a lot of stuff that I was listening to and, you know, stuff he should get into. And then, you know, then he popped a question one day. He's like, dude, you talk about metal and live metal so much. You ever think about starting a TV show? And just for the fuck of it, you know, we started messing with a TV show called Metal Injection. And, you know, fast forward, 17 years later, here we are.
There it is. So did you have any, like, education? Like, did you go to college for anything like video editing, audio marketing, anything?
No.
Web design?
None. I went to college for psychology and music.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, even in high school, my major was music. So I was always a musician, always loved metal. I actually went to the same high school as Peter Steele because he went there, you know.
That's sick.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of this has been trial and error with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of like, I've always been the kind of person that will jump 2 feet first and figure it out, you know? And if you're scared of something, it's usually a good sign that you're going to do something with it, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. I actually recently moved home to go to school for psychology. Like that's like what my plan is, but I'm like, do I want to do that or not? Cause I just got out of college. So do you think of that? What do you think of that degree?
I never finished college, and I'm very happy, you know, and I'm very, you know what? I will say I have a lot of friends that have a debt for the rest of their life.
Oh God.
And, you know, like when we're comparing notes, like life notes here, I think I'm happier in the end because I made something with my life where I didn't need to have a bill hanging over me for the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah. It feels
really good, you know?
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying, I mean, I'm not going to knock college and say that it's, you know, it's no good or anything like that, but.
Right. You're doing what you want to do, man.
Yeah. I think sometimes the best way to learn anything is just do it. You know, I mean, if it's not, unless you're going to be a doctor or something like that, or, you know, like a course, you have to go to school for something like that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, just, you know, I had no plans of becoming a doctor or anything like that. So, or even a therapist, you know, I maybe at one point in my life, I had a half a second thought about it, but I always wanted to be a musician or be creative. So,
yeah,
you know,
that psychology degree must come in handy for the in-person interviews, like a lot though.
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, when you're trying to figure out, you know, who you're talking to and how to maneuver through, you know, where you're overstepping, what's okay to say. Yeah, for sure. But
yeah.
I think so.
So in closing, I will say Vox and Hops, man. I was on that podcast, and I'm just curious, man. How was it? Did you enjoy it?
Sorry, I lost you again. I just you just came back on.
So in closing, there we go. All right, we're back. So Vox and Hops, man, what do you think? I love that freaking podcast. Do you listen to any other podcasts?
Oh, yeah. Funny enough, yeah. Conan O'Brien, like, religiously. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. You were talking about interviewing before.
Yep.
I actually think that Conan O'Brien is the best interviewer of all time.
There we go.
I think the way that he can of course he's funny and everyone knows he's funny, but the way he can navigate through some of the biggest train wrecks in television history, I think is unparalleled, you know? Like, I mean, the guy is so good at what he does, you know, and I don't think people look at him like that, you know, but as someone who interviews a lot and has seen many interviews, I'm not the biggest fan of, you know, of a lot of mainstream interviewers out there, but Conan O'Brien is somebody I totally back, and I love his podcast.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm hesitant. I'm like, do I want to do in-person interviews? But like, my thing is I have to do something creative. Like, I don't want to be that guy that's like, so when did you start guitar, man?
Right.
Like, when did you pick up the instrument?
You should just try and punch every person that you interview when you do in person, so they'll never forget you. That'll be your calling card, you know?
There we go. That's awesome. Yeah, there we go. So that's really all I got. What do we got in store for the future? For anything?
Well, your band Slay at Home is going to happen every single month. You know, new bands, new cover collaborations, all for a new charity every month. Of course, Night Soil is coming out November 6th.
Yep.
And 100% of the proceeds go to Cancer Research Institute, a terrific organization that supports research of all cancers out there. And it's a really important cause to myself personally, to Nick, and really, I mean, every family out there who's been affected by cancer, and there's more and more of them every single year.
Yeah, I applaud you, man. I applaud you on that. I've had two family members pass away from cancer this year. It's horrible, man.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, I really like about you is like Metal Injection is you do a lot of charity and your band does a lot of charity. It's like a, I don't know.
Well, I've been definitely working with charities for quite a while, you know.
Yeah.
So I've been vegetarian most of my, like half my life, turned vegan. And really when I turned vegan is when I started getting more involved with the animal sanctuaries and memberships and charities. And then from there, really, you know, with Slay at Home, I kind of like saw an avenue to take it up a notch. You know, I kind of looked around the world and saw what's going on. And you know, one of those things where it's like, well, you know, we can make a lot of money for ourselves, but why do that when there's, you know, people out there who are far less fortunate than us, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a big part of my life, you know, to work with charities, and I give a lot every single year, you know, and I'm all about that, you know, that vibe of, you know, or the karma. You put out good, you get good. So,
right. Yeah. It's like you do exactly what you love to do every day at your job, which is super hard to accomplish. And then you're donating. So,
well, awesome. I just feel fortunate all around in a lot of regards, and you know, gratitude is it's a tremendous foot forward, you know, for life. So
there it is. All right, so Slay at Home got the album coming out soon. Are we gonna have merch for this new project music?
That's an excellent question, and I think the answer is yes.
Oh, okay. Long sleeves or no?
Yeah, we'll probably work on some long sleeves, and we're trying to figure out a way to make those as like find a price because we want them to be charitable as well, you know.
Right. Yeah, long sleeves are freaking pricey too.
Exactly. Yeah. So it kind of has like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like to make them, we don't, you know, it's
t-shirts are freaking cheap. That's about it. But
yeah, well, it depends how big of an order you start running. You know, we just don't want to go like too crazy or print too little of them. So the cost is too high and then the margin's only like a dollar, you know, donation per shirt type deal. Yep. You know, so we're figuring it out, but it'll get there.
Hell yeah. Well, I'll be picking up a long sleeve if you get it. If not, I'll get something else, whatever.
Sick. I'll keep that in mind.
All right, brother. Well, thanks for hopping on. We got her working, and keep freaking doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for spreading the message and the love and everything.
Dude, big staple in the metal scene. It's freaking insane that I even got an opportunity. So I appreciate that.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
All right. Adios.